captain and many of the passengers were very loving, and we being at sea on the first day of the week, I was moved to declare truth among them. Whereupon the captain said to the passengers, here are things that you never heard in your lives. When we came before Dublin, we took boat and went ashore, and the earth and air smelt, methought, of the corruption of the nation, so that it yielded another smell to me than England did, which I imputed to the popish massacres that had been committed, and the blood that had been spilt in it, from which a foulness ascended. We passed through among the officers of the custom 4 times, yet they did not search us, for they perceived what we were. Some of them were so envious, they did not care to look at us. We did not soon find friends, but went to an inn and sent out to inquire for some. These, when they came to us, were exceedingly glad of our coming and received us with great joy. We stayed there at the weekly meeting, which was a large one, and the power and life of God appeared greatly in it. Afterwards we passed to a province meeting, which lasted 2 days, there being one about the poor and another meeting more general, in which a mighty power of the Lord appeared. Truth was livingly declared, and friends were much refreshed therein. Passing thence about 24 miles, we came to another place, where we had a very good refreshing meeting. But after it, some Papists that were there were angry and raged very much. When I heard of it, I sent for one of them, who was a schoolmaster, but he would not come. Thereupon I sent a challenge to him with all the friars and monks, priests and Jesuits to come forth and try their God and their Christ, which they had made of bread and wine. But no answer could I get from them. I told them they were worse than the priests of Baal, for Baal's priests tried their wooden god, but these durst not try their god of bread and wine. And Baal's priests and people did not eat their god as these did, and then make another. He that was then mayor of Cork, being very envious against truth and friends, had many friends in prison. Knowing I was in the country, he sent 4 warrants to take me. Therefore friends were desirous that I should not ride through Cork. But being at Bandon, there appeared to me in a vision a very ugly visaged man, of a black and dark look. My soul struck at him in the power of God, and it seemed to me that I rode over him with my horse, and my horse set his foot on the side of his face. When I came down in the morning, I told a friend the command of the Lord to me was to ride through Cork, but I bade him tell no man. So we took horse, many friends being with me. When we came near the town, friends would have shown me a way through the back side of it, but I told them my way was through the streets. Taking Paul Maurice to guide me through the town, I rode on. As we rode through the marketplace and by the mayor's door, he seeing me said, there goes George Fox, but he had not power to stop me. When we had passed the sentinels and were come over the bridge, we went to a friend's house and alighted. There the friends told me what a rage was in the town, and how many warrants were granted to take me. While I was sitting there, I felt the evil spirit at work in the town, stirring up mischief against me, and I felt the power of the Lord strike at that evil spirit. By and by, some other friends coming in told me it was over the town and amongst the magistrates that I was in the town. I said, let the devil do his worst. After we had refreshed ourselves, I called for my horse, and having a friend to guide me, we went on our way. Great was the rage that the mayor and others of Cork were in, that they had missed me, and great pains they afterwards took to catch me, having their scouts abroad upon the roads, as I understood, to observe which way I went. Scarce a public meeting I came to, but spies came to watch if I were there. The magistrates and priests sent information one to another concerning me, describing me by my hair, hat, clothes, and horse, so that when I was near 100 miles from Cork, they had an account concerning me and a description of me before I came amongst them. One very envious magistrate, who was both a priest and a justice, got a warrant from the judge of assize to apprehend me. The warrant was to go over all his circuit, which reached near 100 miles. Yet the Lord disappointed all their counsels, defeated all their designs against me, and by his good hand of providence preserved me out of all their snares, and gave us many sweet and blessed opportunities to visit friends and spread truth through that nation. Her meetings were very large, friends coming to them from far and near, and other people flocking in. The powerful presence of the Lord was preciously felt amongst us. Many of the world were reached, convinced, and gathered to the truth. The Lord's flock was increased, and friends were greatly refreshed and comforted in feeling the love of God. Oh, the brokenness that was amongst them in the flowing of life, so that in the power and spirit of the Lord, many together broke out into singing, even with audible voices, making melody in their hearts. After I had traveled over Ireland and visited friends in their meetings as well for business as for worship, and had answered several papers and writings from monks, friars, and Protestant priests, for they were all in a rage against us and endeavored to stop the work of the Lord, and some Jesuits swore in our hearing that we had come to spread our principles in that nation, but should not do it, I returned to Dublin in order to take passage for England. I stayed to the first day's meeting there, which was very large and precious. There being a ship ready and the wind serving, we took our leave of friends, parting in much tenderness and brokenness, in the sense of the heavenly life and power manifested amongst us. Having put our horses and necessaries on board in the morning, we went ourselves in the afternoon, many friends accompanying us to the ship, and diverse friends and friendly people followed us in boats when we were near a league at sea, their love drawing them, though not without danger. A good, weighty, and true people there is in that nation, sensible of the power of the Lord God and tender of His truth. Very good order they have in their meetings, for they stand up for righteousness and holiness, which dams up the way of wickedness. A precious visitation they had, and there is an excellent spirit in them, worthy to be visited. Many things more I could write of that nation and of my travels in it, but thus much I thought good to signify, that the righteous may rejoice in the prosperity of truth. We traveled till we came to Bristol, where I met with Margaret Fell, who was come to visit her daughter Yeomans. I had seen from the Lord a considerable time before that I should take Margaret Fell to be my wife, and when I first mentioned it to her, she felt the answer of life from God thereunto. But though the Lord had opened this thing to me, yet I had not received a command from the Lord for the accomplishing of it then. Wherefore I let the thing rest, and went on in the work and service of the Lord as before, according as He led me, traveling up and down in this nation and through Ireland. But now being at Bristol and finding Margaret Fell there, it opened in me from the Lord that the thing should be accomplished. After we had discoursed the matter together, I told her, if she also was satisfied with the accomplishing of it now, she should first send for her children, which she did. When the rest of her daughters were come, I asked both of them and her sons-in-law if they had anything against it or for it, and they all severally expressed their satisfaction therein. Then I asked Margaret if she had fulfilled and performed her husband's will to her children. She replied, the children know that. Whereupon I asked them whether, if their mother married, they would lose by it. And I asked Margaret whether she had done anything in lieu of it, which might answer it to the children. The children said she had answered it to them, and desired me to speak no more of it. I told them I was plain, and would have all things done plainly, for I sought not any outward advantage to myself. So after I had thus acquainted the children with it, our intention of marriage was laid before friends, both privately and publicly, to their full satisfaction. Many of them gave testimony thereunto that it was of God. Afterwards a meeting being appointed for the accomplishing thereof, in the meeting house at Broadmead in Bristol, we took each other, the Lord joining us together in honorable marriage, in the everlasting covenant and immortal seed of life. In the sense thereof, living and weighty testimonies were borne thereunto by friends, in the movings of the heavenly power which united us. Footnote 190. The Bristol Register of Friends shows the date of the marriage of George Fox to Margaret Fell to have been 8th month, 27, 1669. Then was a certificate relating both the proceedings and the marriage openly read and signed by the relations and by most of the ancient friends of that city, besides many others from diverse parts of the nation. We stayed about a week in Bristol and then went together to Oldstone, where, taking leave of each other in the Lord, we parted, betaking ourselves each to our several services, Margaret returning homeward to the north, and I passing on in the work of the Lord as before. I traveled through Wiltshire, Berkshire, Oxfordshire, Buckinghamshire, and so to London, visiting friends in all of which counties I had many large and precious meetings. Footnote 191. During the next 4 years, George Fox and his wife were almost continually separated from each other. About 3 months after their marriage, Margaret Fox was thrown into Lancaster Prison, where she was kept until a few weeks before her husband sailed on his memorable trip to the West Indies and the American colonies. In 1670, the so-called Conventicle Act, originally passed in 1664, was renewed with increased vigor. The Act limited religious gatherings other than those of the established church to 5 persons and brought all who refused to take an oath under the penalties of the Act. On the first day after the Act came in force, I went to the meeting at Gracechurch Street, where I expected the storm was most likely to begin. When I came there, I found the street full of people and a guard set to keep friends out of their meeting house. I went to the other passage out of Lombard Street, where also I found a guard, but the court was full of people, and a friend was speaking amongst them, but he did not speak long. When he had done, I stood up and was moved to say, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? It is hard for thee to kick against that which pricks thee." Then I showed that it is Saul's nature that persecutes still, and that they who persecute Christ and his members now, where he is made manifest, kick against that which pricks them, that it was the birth of the flesh that persecuted the birth born of the Spirit, and that it was the nature of dogs to tear and devour the sheep, but that we suffered as sheep that bite not again, for we were a peaceable people and loved them that persecuted us. After I had spoken a while to this effect, the constable came with an informer and soldiers, and as they pulled me down, I said, "Blessed are the peacemakers." The commander put me among the soldiers and bade them secure me, saying to me, "You are the man I looked for." They also took John Bernier and another friend and led us away, first to the exchange and afterward toward Moorsfield. As we went along the streets, the people were very moderate. Some of them laughed at the constable and told him we would not run away. The informer went with us unknown, till, falling into discourse with one of the company, he said it would never be a good world till all people came to the good old religion that was 200 years ago. Whereupon I asked him, "Art thou a papist?" "What, a papist, informer? For 200 years ago there was no religion but that of the papists." He saw he had ensnared himself and was vexed at it. For as he went along the streets, I spoke often to him and manifested what he was. When we were come to the mayor's house and were in the courtyard, several of the people that stood about asked me how and for what I was taken. I desired them to ask the informer and also what his name was, but he refused to tell his name. Whereupon one of the mayor's officers, looking out at a window, told him he should tell his name before he went away, for the Lord Mayor would know by what authority he intruded himself with soldiers into the execution of those laws which belong to the civil magistrate to execute and not to the military. After this, he was eager to be gone and went to the porter to be let out. One of the officers called to him, saying, "Have you brought people here to inform against, and now will you go away before my Lord Mayor comes?" Some called to the porter not to let him out, whereupon he forcibly pulled open the door and slipped out. No sooner was he come into the street than the people gave a shout that made the street ring again, crying out, "A papist informer, a papist informer." We desired the constable and soldiers to go and rescue him out of the people's hands, fearing lest they should do him a mischief. They went and brought him into the mayor's entry, where they stayed a while. But when he went out again, the people received him with another shout. The soldiers were fain to go and rescue him once more, and they led him into a house in an alley, where they persuaded him to change his periwig, and so he got away unknown. When the mayor came, we were brought into the room where he was, and some of his officers would have taken off our hats, perceiving which he called to them, and bade them let us alone and not meddle with our hats. For, said he, they are not yet brought before me in judicature. So we stood by while he examined some Presbyterian and Baptist teachers, with whom he was somewhat sharp, and convicted them. After he had done with them, I was brought up to the table where he sat, and then the officers took off my hat. The mayor said mildly to me, "Mr. Fox, you are an eminent man among those of your profession. Pray, will you be instrumental to dissuade them from meeting in such great numbers? For, seeing Christ hath promised that where two or three are met in his name, he will be in the midst of them, and the king and parliament are graciously pleased to allow four to meet together to worship God. Why will not you be content to partake both of Christ's promise to two or three, and the king's indulgence to four?" Footnote 192. In a very keen letter, Fox told the magistrates that this act would have prevented the 12 apostles and the 70 disciples from meeting. I answer to this purpose. Christ's promise was not to discourage many from meeting together in his name, but to encourage the few, that the fewest might not forbear to meet because of their fewness. But if Christ hath promised to manifest his presence in the midst of so small an assembly, where but two or three are gathered in his name, how much more would his presence abound where 200 or 300 are gathered in his name? I wished him to consider whether this act, if it had been in their time, would not have taken hold of Christ, with his 12 apostles and 70 disciples, who used to meet often together, and that with great numbers. However, I told him this act did not concern us, for it was made against seditious meetings, of such as met under color and pretense of religion, to contrive insurrections, as, the act says, late experience had shown. But we had been sufficiently tried and proved, and always found peaceable, and therefore he would do well to put a difference between the innocent and the guilty. He said the act was made against meetings, and a worship not according to the liturgy. I told him, according to, was not the very same thing, and asked him whether the liturgy was according to the scriptures, and whether we might not read scriptures and speak scriptures. He said, yes. I told him, this act takes hold only of such as meet to plot and contrive insurrections, as late experience hath shown, but they have never experienced that by us. Because thieves are sometimes on the road, must not honest men travel? And because plotters and contrivers have met to do mischief, must not an honest, peaceable people meet to do good? If we had been a people that met to plot and contrive insurrections, etc., we might have drawn ourselves into fours, for four might do more mischief in plotting than if there were 400, because four might speak out their minds more freely to one another than 400 could. Therefore we, being innocent and not the people this act concerns, keep our meetings as we used to do. I believe thou knowest in thy conscience that we are innocent. After some more discourse, he took our names and the places where we lodged, and at length, as the informer was gone, he set us at liberty. The friends with me now asked, "Whither wilt thou go?" I told them, "To Grace Church Street meeting again, if it is not over." When we came there, the people were generally gone, only some few stood at the gate. We went into Gerard Roberts. Then